The views and opinions of the hosts and guests of this program are of their own and not a reflection of Milwaukee Black Media or 101.7 The Truth. Good afternoon, Milwaukee. You're tuned in to the Lunch Break on 101.7 The Truth, where everything is an option on the menu.
And one thing about me, I'm a tough cookie, but I know what I can't do. And I'm not suffering, all right? I fought my whole life. I'm all right.
Excuse me, Cletus. Hop over this, man.
Yeah, I wasn't doing it. So I was like, I'm not paying $1,000 to sleep on somebody's couch.
Grab your lunch, hit send on that email, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
My way of thinking is that the parents do all they can, but once the kids leave out that door, whatever have you, they make their own decisions. I don't care if you're 9 or 99, it's still your decision about the situations that you get involved yourself in.
We talking about taxpaying citizens. Look into their taxes. Look into this. We talking about elected officials doing backdoor deals, and somehow she still want to blame immigrants. That's what we talking about right now. We following the money, and you still want to blame black people and immigrants and welfare and all of these things for policies and backdoor deals that put poor people in worse position.
Now, live from the American Family Insurance Studio at the 3rd Street Market Hall.
Like you said, they want to pad their pockets, but they need a reason to push things through. And I guess the low-hanging fruit is, okay, well, this is a problem, right? Y'all want to fix the problem, and they just hope nobody looks into it. Like, wait, when did food trucks become an issue?
Here are your hosts, Ray Nitti and maybe Shannon.
What's up? What's up, y'all? You are listening to The Lunch Break with Ray Nitti and maybe Shannon. Milwaukee, what is up? We got Brother Z. He's holding it down on production and sound. And we are live from the American Family Studio inside the beautiful 3rd Street Market Hall. Make sure you guys are following me on all platforms. Maybe Shannon, MaybeShannon. And make sure you guys head over to Facebook as well. Join our Lunch Break crew. We're building a community over there. We are The Lunch Break on Facebook. Make sure you guys head over there. All right? We want to hear from you. We want to keep the conversation going, all right? We also would like you guys to give us a call. If you want to call us throughout the show, make sure you call us at 833-212-1017. If you've got something to say, call us. Let us know. Let us know how you feel. You can text that number too, but we want to hear from you. And again, that number is 833-212-1017. You can call, you can text, and we actually want, if you want to see what's going on in the studio, you can always head over to YouTube. We are 101.7 The Truth on YouTube. You can join the chat, join our cousins in the chat. They always got something to say. You can join in with them and watch us live in the studio. All right, and we're here from 12 to 2. So whether you're on your lunch break or just driving around Milwaukee, or if you're sitting at that desk pretending to work like we know y'all do, make sure you guys are tapped in with us. Let us know your, let them know your lunch break is 2 hours now. 12 to 2, we are here. We are here in studio. All right, so we got a quick recap of yesterday, right? But before we get into that, let's talk about what we got going on. All right, so we're gonna have an interview today. Super excited about that, right? We gonna talk about that too. Before I recap, right? We got what we have on the menu. I'm super excited to share that with you guys, right? So let's get into it, okay? So the True Family Fest, we talked about that yesterday. We talked about me visiting my grandma. We talked about the Asian festival where we saw got a little hectic, just a little bit. It was some fighting going on. Then we talked about Damon Darling, that situation surrounding his reported lifetime ban at Walmart and a few other places associated with Walmart. That opened a bigger conversation about real life consequences of pranks and things you do on social media, or whether or not like he's being punished for doing good things, because that's what most of his content is now. Then we had that wild viral video of a man dressed up like Spider-Man, it was, confronting some demonstrators at the far right neo-Nazi rally. And we asked whether that was brave, dangerous, or both. Then we talked about Target. We talked about the backlash that they got over a costume and the criticism and why they got criticized so harshly, especially because the costume looked so close to blackface, right? the latest developments on that is Target has apologized. And of course, they said like something like, oh, yeah, we made a mistake. Whoopsie daisy. That, you know how that goes, right? That's normally how it is. We also got into some developments about Sean Grayson, the murderer of Sonya Massey. And we talked about her background and we went into what happened in that situation and why I really wasn't, you know, I wasn't tripping when I heard he passed away. I was like, eh, that happens to the best of us, don't it? So we also talked about Master P and we talked about the bigger question, whether you can focus on building success and Black wealth without minimizing history, because I think his clip to me, it sounded a lot like he was saying, just get over it and we'll be just fine, right? That's like, just get over it and you'll be able to focus on your success and you'll be fine. But a lot of people have pushed back because they felt like forgetting our history doesn't have to be a part of building our future. So today we have Dean of Students, Paul Tax from Greater Holy Temple Christian Academy. That interview is coming after the break. We're going to talk about his childhood. We're going to talk about turning his life around. We're going to talk about the work he does in that school. It's going to be a great conversation. I'm super excited about this interview. After that, we're going to get into something that went viral in Milwaukee. I know everybody's talking about it. The No Milwaukee Rap Playlist at one of our major bars here on Brady. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the list, what names were on it, because it was very specific what artists they didn't want other than the No Milwaukee Rap, right? Then we're going to talk about something I saw about the owner's private Facebook and what he posted and how I feel about that. Oh, not the owner. Oh, a different bar. Okay, so Zach just told me it was the owner of a different bar, but we just going to talk about that post. And we're going to get into why it made me look at the garage differently. So we're going to get into that. And then we're going to talk about a sex toy being thrown onto a WNBA court and what the players are saying, what security can realistically do, and why people feel so comfortably doing something like that in public. So keep that number handy, 833-212-1017. That's the number to call. Make sure you call, text, jump on YouTube, hit us up, all right? We are at the lunch break. So, yesterday, like I said, it was a good day. We had a great time here on the lunch break. I know we talked a lot about the reason that costume was so disrespectful, right? And I do want to read exactly what Target had to say, because like I said, their apology was very... It felt like something they had to do. It didn't feel genuine. It didn't feel personable. It didn't feel to me like they did it because they really did feel like they made a mistake. It more so felt like something they just had to do. Like they were just doing their housekeeping. Like, oh, look, I guess everybody's mad. Because if you go to like their social media pages, you're seeing people react to like what they feel like is disrespect and them blatantly playing in our face. If we're being honest, and I completely understand why it feels like that, especially because they just, like we talked about yesterday, they had just walked back a bunch of DEI promises that they made to the Black community. They told us that they were going to spend X amount of money pushing the Black community and doing all this good stuff. But then it feels like once Trump said, y'all don't have to do it, they said, great. And they changed their minds. And then you see a costume like that. And it really, really makes you wonder, was it purposeful? Like, was it one of those things that just kind of slipped through the cracks? Yesterday, I talked about how long the process is to even get, like, an item on, like, Target's website. Like, it's not like AliExpress and you can just throw something up there. It's not like you can just be like, oh, I'm going to sell this at Target and throw it online. That's not how that goes. So I'm going to read that apology as well. So, it said, an apology from us. We removed an offensive Halloween costume that should have never been part of our assortment. It is no longer for sale. As a company, we got this wrong, and we are deeply sorry. We know this is especially hurtful for our Black guests, team members, and partners. Removing the costume is an important first step, and we are looking closely at how this happened and what needs to change to ensure this won't happen again. And that's the thing, man. Like, how does something like that happen? Like, I wish I had the answers. I genuinely do wish I could tell y'all how something like that happened, because to me, it's not something that easily happens. Let me check out the chat. We got Not Really a City Girl in the chat. She says, Shannon, you are holding it down again. I am holding it down again. We got Jasmine Jazzy West in the chat as well. Great seeing y'all. Jasmine Jazz West, she pulled up on us. Zach.
At True Family Fest, right?
Yeah. I didn't see her in the chat yesterday. I definitely wanted to talk about that. She definitely pulled up for us, and it was good to see our cousins. We call them our cousins. The chat is our cousins. We be tussling sometimes, but it's always a good time, and it's always good to see them. Like, I was so excited to see them out in the live, in the wild, you know? But yeah, Jazz, I'm here by myself. I'm holding it down. Your cousin Ray is in Poland. We got to talk about it. When he get back, we got to hear about this trip. But he's definitely in Poland, and I've been holding it down. Z's got production and sound. So it's been going good. But like I said, I'm super excited to come back. After this break, we have a wonderful interview. Dean of Students Paul Tax from Greater Holy Temple Christian Academy. This is super exciting, y'all. You don't want to miss this. Stay there. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this break.
Don't go anywhere.
What's up, you guys? You are back listening to The Lunch Break with Ray Nitti and maybe Shannon. Ray, my partner in crime, is not here today. It's just me, but we have an awesome interview. We have Paul. Paul, welcome to The Lunch Break. I'm glad to have you here.
Man, I'm honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course.
Hope I can bring something to the table.
Oh, you can. Look, I'm like, oh, you can. So before we get into your story, I do want you to introduce yourself to the listeners. Who is Paul? It's Tax.
I hear it all. Like, it's just, no, like I literally let it ride because it's like, yeah. I get it all. So it's
like whatever feels right.
Take us out to the ball game. But,
I know, yeah. That's right.
That's why I'm Mr. Paul. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah. Mr. Paul. So who are you today and what is your role at Greater Holy Temple Christian Academy?
Okay, that's a deep one. Who I am today, I think, like, as a man, I think I'm someone who actually knows who they are. Right, and what I mean by that is, life is a long journey. It's so many ups and downs, and I just really love being in the spot, just being a father, being a man who really wants to give back, because I felt like that's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. So I love having a job that I feel like on a daily basis I'm able to give back to the community, and honestly, I get more from it than I probably get to them.
Yeah,
but it's I'm blessed to go to a passion, not a workplace.
I know that's right. I think that makes it so much easier. Yeah. When you really do get something from what you're doing and you feel like this is who I'm supposed to be, this is what I'm supposed to do. It's not a job. Like, it's really like filling your cup. So that's beautiful.
I definitely agree. As far as like at the school with the Dean of Students role, this is my fourth year serving in that position. Mm-hmm. I started at school as a security guard.
Really?
And it's just like, I don't know. Yeah, you know what I mean? That's how I started to get. And we can get into that a little bit later, but this is my fourth year as a dean, and basically I'm there to serve the students, the parents, the staff, and really just, you know, a lot of times when people hear, like, you know, dean of students, they always think about behavior, but I think about relationships. You know, that's where I feel like my biggest role is just building relationships, repairing relationships, and being that, like, you know, we all got wisdom with the years, so, like, just trying to pass on some of that wisdom that I can.
Man, for sure. So, Dean of Students, working with young people in this leadership position, people may not know everything it took to get here. So, how would you describe the journey that made who you are?
Long. I'd say long and rough in some ways, but then also beautiful in some ways.
Yeah.
My story is different than, like, a lot of the, you know, students we serve or maybe our community. Like, so, like, I also think I had an interesting take on life, and I'm able to see that, like, different angles, like, we all are.
Like your perspective is super unique.
Yeah, and I think all of us, all of ours are. Like,
right.
You know, that's why I love talking to people. That's why I love getting to know people, because I think we can learn so much from each other.
Okay.
And my story is a little bit different, but I just feel grateful because, like I said, there's people that I came up with that's no longer with us.
Man.
There's people with us that couldn't overcome some of their struggles, you know, and it's like I'm just thankful that I was able to, you know,
for sure.
to make it out.
So I want to go all the way back, right? You were born in Alabama to a black father, a white mother. What do you know about the circumstances? Because you also were adopted. So do you know much about the circumstances surrounding, like, your adoption?
So, I think that really, like, kind of formed some of my, like, I want to say issues, but maybe some of my insecurities growing up. So I was adopted because my mama didn't want to have a black child. Mm. That's as easy as we can say it. When she found out I was, you know, that she was going to have me, like, she hid it. She, like, went to a seminary and just, like, hid away. Like, no one even really knew she was pregnant. Like no one knew she was pregnant. She gave birth to me. When she finally gave birth to me, she didn't have me longer than 24 hours, and that was just by law she had to have me that
long.
And then, like, her biggest thing was get him as far away as possible. Like, she didn't even give my father the chance to get me. And so, like, all of that stuff I kind of learned because I didn't, when I was 23, I did actually find him. But, you know, even when you're growing up and you don't know that story, you know you was giving up.
Right.
You know, like, you know that that's part of it. Now, I will say this. I don't have the same adoption story as a lot of people. Like, I was adopted into an all-white family. My sister is Korean, but, like, my parents and my other brother and sister, you know, I was born into a white family, and they're loving.
Yeah.
I just want to make that clear. I do not have, like, some of the unfortunate stories that some adopted, you know, children have. Like, I don't have that.
Right.
But it was, like, a missing piece that they couldn't give me.
Right, right.
You know, I know it's debated in our community, but I can just tell you.
Yeah.
If you ever drop a black in you, you black.
Yeah.
There's never one time in my life where I was looked at as white. looked
like
at
you
as
knew
as
you
as
were different.
Man,
yeah.
Like, you know, and then even with us, like, you know, I grew up in a suburban neighborhood. So, like, I was in Menominee Falls before. Like, and you go out to Menominee Falls now, you might bump into a few of us.
Right.
When I was out there,
yeah,
it was not there.
I already you know what I'm saying? Because, like even now, like, you people still, like, you could tell they not that used to seeing too many. Now, it's too many of y'all now. They looking like, hold on, what's going on here?
So, like, that formed it as well. You know what I'm saying? Just kind of, like, my journey, like, just having to, you know, navigate through that. But, I'm always really, like, careful to say, like, I love my parents. Like, they might have not been able to give me that, but they gave me everything else. My brother, sister, like, they gave me everything else as far as love and support. So,
yeah. It's crazy because my dad, he's actually biracial. Okay. And he was adopted for the same reason. He was born in the 50s.
Okay.
So, you know, they wasn't.
Back.
Like, he ended up being raised by, like, an all-black family in the hood. Like, he was... So it was like the same story, but two different ways that it went. And like, I think it's funny that you say, like, even though you had a loving family, he said the same thing. Like, I had a very loving family, but you know, it's a piece of you that kind of be like, dang, that's kind of messed up how I ended up here. What the heck? And they didn't even have, like, I think it was a closed adoption. So he had, like, no real, like, paperwork behind it. Like, nothing. Like, he had nothing to go off of. So definitely, like, I feel where you're coming from with feeling like, you know, it's a little something missing or what, you know. So when we talk about, you knew you had a loving family, but they weren't necessarily equipped to help you move through the world as a black boy, right? When did you realize that something was missing? Or, like, was there, like, a moment where you were just like, man, like, I don't know if they doing great, but...
You know, that's funny you say that. Like, just thinking about it, if I had to give an answer to that, it'd probably be like I always felt like I wasn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, but probably like fifth, sixth grade when, like, because back then, you know, we didn't get, like, now you got kids, they sharp it.
Yeah.
Four, like, when they 7 years old, they getting cut. But, like, when you, like, you know, back then, like, you know, probably when I would, like, start getting the haircuts, like, my daddy would give me the bowl cut. You know what I'm saying? I love him for it, too. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
you look at all my old school pics, it's like, man, you know, but,
no.
You know, so, like, but, like, when you started having to, or, like, like when you had to try to get fresh or something like that. Like they didn't know they couldn't go to Bouchard's or Playmakers or none of that. You know what I'm saying? So
they're like, you gonna get this Kohl's cash. It's a version of fresh, but it's like that ain't what they wear.
That ain't the Nikes we trying to get. That ain't Dookies. So like I would just say like that, and then coming up when, even if you think about it, like, and that's one thing, big thing. Well, it's one thing I'm big at it at my school is like if you look at the lunch tables.
Yeah.
You know, just pay attention to lunch tables, man. You got some kids that sitting by themselves. You know, you got some kids that they don't got a big group. And you know, when that started to happen for me, I think that's when it was like, okay, like, you know, because when we young, like kids, like I really do truly feel like racism is taught.
Oh yeah.
Like when you go to a playground, them kids just playing with whoever.
Exactly.
It's when they get older where you start, you know, seeing like different sides, just different stuff coming out. So,
So what was it like growing up in a predominantly white neighborhood? And you went to predominantly white schools too. And you talked about like just feeling almost like secluded from everybody else at some point. Like, so the kids kind of made you feel different, and it was, or was it more internal? Do you think?
I think it was more internal. Like I had friends of every race. Like, you know what I'm saying? Still some that I'm, you know, close with, or when I see them to this day is good, but you know, it'd be like that summertime thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they had the 220 program out there. So there was a lot of, you know, there was a handful of us out in Menominee Falls, right? Like, we did have, but like, once that summer hit, it's like, oh, they gone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's the time where I'm supposed to be kicking it, and it's like, oh, like, you know, it's just a little bit different. So, also, I think it's just like, even with my sister, like, I just had a lot to figure out.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of people, like that's most people's stories. You know what I'm saying? I don't think I'm unique to that, but I think mine was, I just really didn't know who to turn to figure myself out.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was going to say. Like, did you ever feel like torn between two worlds? It kind of sounds like you did. Like you knew you had a loving home life. Mm-hmm. You know, you knew like the people around you loved you and cared for you, but did you ever feel like they couldn't fully understand what you were experiencing and what you were going through at the time?
Yes, I feel like that. But one thing that I always appreciated and loved them for is they knew we grew up in two different worlds.
Okay.
Like my parents, like you know what I'm saying? Like my mom and all my family, like they didn't pretend like we was in the same world, you know? And like my, and just to let you know, my parents and my family are allies.
Okay.
like you know,
I can tell.
Like
can
they
tell.
Allies, like Yaya, I call her Yaya, that's my mom. She never played about me.
Yes.
My father marched across that bridge with Father Grappi every single day.
That.
You know, my brother, sister, all of them, like they are, you know, they are allies. And, you know, one quick story just about my mom I want to, you know, say is when we used to live in Wauwatosa, and I was in fourth grade, and my sister had, back then, she climbed through the window. She forgot her key, climbed through the window. Well, anyways, a neighbor had called, said a black person broke into the house, right? And so I'm sleeping downstairs, and the police kicking our door. You know what I'm saying? Come in, shotguns out, and they handcuffed me and everything. Now I'm in fourth grade. You know what I'm saying? And
hell no.
Yeah, no, like
fourth grade.
This is a real like this is a real story. And my brothers and sisters coming down like because we don't know what's going on. It's early in the morning. It's like so they waking up. They don't and they ain't trying to hear nothing. Even though we got family pictures around, all type of stuff. And I'm gonna tell you something, man. Like I feel bad for whatever police officer that went because my mom came down there and y'all got straight wild out. And she never played that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's like, but those are experiences that taught them that like, we are not in the same world, even though we're in the same loving family.
We definitely going to get deeper into that after these messages. We're going to go to break and we're going to get back into it. Right now, we are listening to 101.7 The Truth. We are listening to The Lunch Break. We're here 12 to 2 and we're doing a great interview. We're gonna continue this. We're talking to Paul Tax, Dean of Students at Greater Holy Temple Christian Academy, y'all. Stay locked in. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't matter, man.
It's not life. It's gonna be alright. Win or lose is part of life. One so bad I stayed up all night. Put my all in this song.
Man, we are back. We live 101.7 The Truth. You're listening to The Lunch Break with Ray, Nitty, and maybe Shannon. We are at the beautiful Third Street Market Hall, and we are in the middle of a really good interview. I'm having a great time. We're here with Paul Tax.
However you want to say it. However you want to say it. We good. Yeah, Lizzie. However you want to say it.
We're with Miss. wait, Mr. Paul.
Mr. Paul.
There
yeah,
we go. Mr. Paul. There we go. Dean of Students. All right. We here and we talking about his life story. We talking about the ups and downs, how he was adopted into a family that he didn't quite fit into, but they loved him unconditionally. And we just talking about his story and what led him to where he is today. And we left off when you were telling me about not always feeling like you guys lived in the same world, but you also had parents that didn't play about you. And they made sure, like, they were allies to you, which is a beautiful thing, too. And, like, I did want to mention that, like, the thing people fail to realize when they go, oh, I don't see color, like, that's more harmful than anything. Like, acknowledging, like, yeah, we ain't in the same world, and I have to be able to be here for you in a different way than I can be for, like, my white child. You know what I'm saying? So I respect that, and that's definitely what's needed. So looking back, right, how much do you think that search for your identity played into some of the choices that you eventually made?
Yeah, like not giving excuses, but I think a lot.
Yeah.
Like when I look at probably like the crossroads in my life, it was me not knowing myself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'm so thankful for like the stuff that the community is providing for our kids, like the different like the corridor that Ray got, you know what I'm saying? Where you can be an artist there.
Man.
You can be a painter there. You can go book time in the studio. Like that stuff is so needed because listen, like a lot of stuff, like the community took a lot of stuff away from our kids. Now, does that mean that they're supposed to be going doing meetups and stuff like that? No.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not giving them excuses.
They only leaving kids to their own devices,
yeah.
Like find your own fun and with no direction. Yeah. So.
And then you know, and I think sometimes we fail to talk about like some of the distractions they got that we didn't have.
Man.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's a two-way street.
For sure.
But like as far as me personally, yes, like that led me down the wrong path. Also, like when I was 15, 16, I used to always be an athlete, multi-sports, and I had a heart condition that popped up.
Okay.
So like I collapsed on the basketball court, and like it just was like from going to like do sports all day every day to like not being able to do it no more.
Yeah.
I think that was also a big thing. That,
and
like,
they also say a busy kid is a kid that's out of trouble.
Yes.
And once you're not as busy as you used to be, trouble kind of starts to call your name.
Listen, I don't think I smoked none before I was playing sports.
Yeah.
After that, it is what it is. But like, so like I think there's a couple, you know, a few things in my life. But again, we all go through them.
Yeah.
And I just didn't make the right choice. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I didn't make the right choice.
Right. And you did talk about... I know, like, how you jumped off the porch and you got in a little trouble. Do you want to tell me about that period of time, what was happening in your life?
Yeah, for sure. It's a period of time that I always am very concerned with, like, our students. It's like that right after that high school time.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Where it's like a lot of your classmates might be going to college. A lot of them might be doing stuff. And when you don't have a plan, like what you gonna do? You know what I'm saying? And, like, the only people that really don't got plans are people that really ain't doing nothing, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, that, so, you know, I was 19 when I caught a felony, strong-arm robbery. Served my time, did it. And then when I got out, like, really soon after I got out, like, that's when my first child was going to come.
Yeah.
So it was a point in my life where I said, I have to do something.
Yeah.
Like I said, like, I ain't trying to do that. So I jumped into a welding program. You know, actually Big Step is still here in Milwaukee. I would recommend anyone who's like trying to figure it out. They teach trade programs, multiple trade programs out there. I actually just brought one of my former students who's 20,
nice.
Who was kind of like at that same crossroads. So I'm like, hold on, bro.
It's like,
we about to, listen, I went and took him to the DMV to get his ID. Then we took him up to Big Step and they have a wonderful staff over there too. I got to meet some of them. So they have a wonderful staff up there and they're really just trying to like connect people to trades and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where like, I just had to make that switch.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
right.
It's like, you know, Christiana, I call her Muffy. You know what I'm saying? It's
my
oldest, but she the one, like, I just knew I couldn't.
Yeah. I was like, this ain't it. I gotta change something now. So when you did catch the felony, like, what do you think you were specifically looking for? Like, were you looking for, like, respect, belonging, identity, acceptance, like, or just excitement or something to prove? Like,
I'm going to tell you, I was so lost. I was excited when I got locked up. Like, I ain't even going to lie.
You know, at least you able to admit that.
Yeah, I ain't even going to lie.
I talk about that all the time. I'm like, sometimes these kids kind of feel like, I got a stripe now. I did that. You know,
like, and that, I'm not proud of it. I ain't going to hold back the truth.
Yeah.
Like, like, I was excited. Like, you know, I had, like I said, a lot of the people I had around me, like, even when I was out there wilding, you know what I'm saying? Like, they still was loving people, you know what I'm saying? Like, my brother Dre, rest in peace, like, he always tried to keep me out of it. Yeah. He like, bro, you ain't, this ain't for you. He's like, I ain't saying you ain't.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Tough,
but he's like, this ain't for you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, unfortunately, he got killed. You know what I'm saying? Really? And, by that time, I had kind of made my change in life. But, like, someone like him who really was trying to help me out, was trying to, like, you know what I'm saying, keep me from it. Like, you know, I still thank God for him. You know what I'm saying? Because I probably would have been much more, you know what I'm saying, off the way. But, like, I don't know. It just, you know, it.
So it looks like we got a few callers.
Okay.
Look, you're a popular man. You're very popular, Paul.
Okay. Okay. That's a good thing.
Man, so we got a few callers. We're going to go to caller one first. Ray, you're on the line.
What's happening? Black and Poland. What's happening, man?
What's up?
Hey, just was calling in, man. Give y'all some love, man, from the Poland. Man, Paul, you know you my dude, bro. Love you, bro. Super proud of you, dog. You got an amazing story. You and your wife gave me my first real clothing placement in your stores. Yeah. And that kicked off a whole lot of different endeavors for me, man. I just wanted to call in and let the city know, man, that Paul is one of them, man. That's a gem. We ain't never going to be able to get another one like Paul. And what he say, he mean it, and it's authentic, and it's genuine, and it's hell, and I can attest to that. His family welcomed me like they knew me from the first day they met me, and it's been tight ever since. And Shannon, I'm proud of you, man. You look good in that chair,
man.
I'm in charge. Say you in charge.
I'm in charge,
you in charge. I want to hear you say
that. Say you in charge.
Say it.
Who in charge?
You're my partner.
I know.
Say I'm in charge.
Hey, Ray, I still got some of them shirts, man. You got to bring it back, man. I love those shirts, man. You got to bring it back.
Oh, man.
Straight up.
For sure,
and I appreciate
for
them
sure,
words,
man.
Right? Because, like, you know, it, like, just, you know, just for me, man, what you do for the community and the kids, man, it is needed, and you do it to an extent that, man, we don't see out here. So it's like, it's examples like y'all, you know what I'm saying? I was telling Shannon before we got on the air, but it's examples like y'all that they really want to see.
Yeah.
You know, they don't always want to see Mr. Paul. They see me every day. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, they want to see people who's really out here doing it. And it's like, man, I'm just thankful for y'all. So, man, I appreciate you, bro. You know, it's mutual respect. Man, I love you, bro. And man, enjoy polling, man.
Man, I'm trying, bro. I think we the only blacks out here, bro. I ain't seen not one black on the plane, not one on the airport, not one in the town. Your first black I saw was my mother and sister. I'm like, damn.
Hey, hold it down for us, man.
But, yeah, man, I'm proud of y'all. Brother Z, man, love y'all, man. Keep holding it down. Love what y'all doing. Shannon, you doing an amazing job. Keep
thank
it up. And
you,
I'm super
you.
Proud looking at your growth right here, man.
Man.
Keep it warm for me. Stay in town another week. Don't go anywhere.
Thanks, Ray. All right. We have another caller. We only got you for so long. But listen, you are live, Kevin. We're talking to Paul. What's up?
Hey, I'm not as like the guy energy he has. I appreciate his energy and thinking that, you know, yeah, we got people out here like Paul. I don't know Paul, you know, but I'm hearing the story and it coincides with mine being locked up, you know, and just what all, you know, got me to that point, you know, and how I made it out. You know, I did 16 years, 8 months here in Milwaukee and all over there, shipping us everywhere. But I look back and on them days when I was locked up and I said, well, who warned me, you know, who warned me from all this? It was my mother, you know, being a, you know, father not in the house, you know, when he wasn't a father. God bless him anyway. But I know I might go a little bit here everywhere, but she told me, not to hang around people that were older than I was. Mm. You see, when I was 13, I hung around somebody 15, so I'm trying to do what they do harder so I can show that I can hang around with them, you know. So that's what I thought about in prison. And I try to do what they do just to prove that I can do what they do, but I can do it a little better. So that was one of the parts that the young kids need to understand. Don't, if you hang around somebody old, you need to be a little boy first. You know, you can't grow up too fast. I see these young guys around here toting the pistol, little 13, 14 years old, hanging around older people, you know, and they running things. They're not the ones that's using the drug. They can sell it because they don't use it. Mm. And so I heard a lot in prison. I was in a hole, and I heard another guy say, "Man, I'm gonna get out, get me some young guys, and I'm finding out the ones that their mother ain't taking care of. I'm gonna give them some money, and I'm gonna do this, and you know, do that." And he gonna look up to that person then.
Okay. All right, man. Thank you, Kevin, for calling us and sharing that part of your story. Yeah, so let's get back into these questions. We definitely had a good call from Kevin, a good call from Ray. Shout out to Ray for hitting us up. We do have to go to break shortly, but we want to get back into your story. I know we talked about just how you got to where you are, how you caught a felony. You decided, I'm going to turn my life around. This ain't for me. Yeah. You were in the middle of telling us that story, and we're going to get back into it after these messages. We're going to go on break. If you guys want to give us a call, you can always call us at 833-212-1017. We got Robert Lance. He said, shout out to Paul. Paul is popular.
I appreciate you, boy.
Man, we're going to be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere. Tap in with us, and we're going to continue this good interview with the Dean of Students at Greater Holy Temple Christian Academy.
Don't go anywhere.
I never let you down, I'ma shine on sight. Keep your mind on your grind and off of mine's alright. Right, hard, I'ma ball, don't know squares. I float in $250,000 cars everywhere I go. I know, in the lead it may seem me might be, but no matter what they doing, they don't do it like me. Like a G, I hold it down for the town I'm at. In a flash like that, recognize I'm back. Strike a match, catch a fly.
What's up? You are listening to The Lunch Break with Ray Nitty and Maybe Shannon. It's just Maybe Shannon today, but we're doing a great interview, man. Like y'all heard, we got Paul Tax here in the studio, and we are talking about his life story. We're talking about how he caught a felony. We're talking about his adoption story, finding yourself, and how he became the Dean of Students. Paul has an interesting story. Yeah. All right, and we're going to get back into it. Where we left off was we were talking about him trying to find himself. He got that felony, and we asked him what he was looking for at that time. Did he think he had something to prove? And we talked about that. We talked about him having a daughter and that changing the trajectory of where he was going. And I know we talked a little bit about you being 19 and you feeling like, man, I'm the man. I didn't caught this charge. And it's funny, we had that conversation, too, where, people want you to be like, oh, well, woe is me. This is what I was thinking. Nah, a lot of the kids think that way, yeah. too. So it's important to have somebody to understand where that mindset is and be like, you know what? I did think like that. So I know what to say to somebody like that. So when you were 19, what did 19-year-old Paul think his future looked like? Before you got out, before you had your baby, what was you thinking?
You know, it's funny you ask that because, my daughter... My daughter Phoenix asked me yesterday. She's like, "Daddy, what you wanted to be when you grew up?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was honest with her. I was like, "Daddy didn't want to do nothing." Mm. Like at 19, I was living day to day.
Yeah.
Like I had no dreams, no aspirations. Man. And that's where I think a lot of it went wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't care.
Nothing to look forward to at the time.
So that's what 19-year-old me looked like. And I think bumping my head was good for me.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? It definitely woke me up. And then, like I said, I went into welding after that. So, that kind of gave me a stability of as far as, okay, I can take care of my family now. I can take care of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And even though it wasn't, but that's where the hard work and work ethic comes in.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like doing it. I was good at it.
Yeah.
So I got paid good. But it wasn't my passion. It was just something it was just a job.
It got you. It got you by.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, how I got to the school. You know, if maybe we could, you know, if you want to transition there, was it literally was a point in my life where I was tired of welding. And I'm like, man, I just don't want to do this no more. And I had volunteered. So 4 years early, I had volunteered for a mentorship program at my school.
Okay.
Right. But it was just a mentorship program. I wasn't working there.
Mm-hmm.
I had just reached out on Facebook like, hey, I'm trying to give back to some kids. Is there any mentorship programs out there? So I completed the mentorship program and just went on my way.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, randomly, I get a text message from our CEO, and he at the time he was just like, "Hey, I think I got the perfect job for you. I know you're working, but like I think I got the perfect job. It'd be security up at the school." And like he didn't know that like that had kind of already been in my prayers, like to like transition out of welding.
Yeah. Because that's a hard job. And look.
You know, you come home dirty. Like literally when I went to the interview, I told him, I'm like, bro, I'm on my way after I get off.
Yeah.
So I'm dirty. I'm like all like, and I'm like, bro, I ain't going to look like this every day. But I was like, man, I don't want you to offer this to no one else, man. I need this. And by the time I drove home, and before I even hit the driveway, they had offered me the position.
Man.
And so it 2 days later, I started at the job, and I haven't lived since. Like, you know what I'm saying? I just been there. And that was going on 13 years now that I've been at the school.
Man, 13 years. So what does it, like, how does it feel, right, knowing somebody's trusting you to put you in this position?
A few things. One, I thank the parents every single day. Like, it is an honor to be able to work with their kids. When I was in school, so, like, go back, like, I never felt seen either. Like, I did, like, you know, people would be like, oh, this was my favorite teacher. Ooh, I never had a favorite teacher. I never really had anyone speak life to me. So, like, even when I was doing security, like, that was my mission every single day. Mm. Like, every kid gonna feel seen. Like, we have, I don't know, we had 550 kids last year. Like, every single day you're going to get either a high five or a handshake or, like, a hug or something from me, you know what I'm saying? Because I refuse to let any kid go unseen. Mm. And so, like, I just be really thankful for our parents. We have an excellent staff. Like, I work, like, these teachers are amazing. I could never do what they do. Like, I couldn't even, I can barely walk a K-4 line down, quietly down the hallway. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, they got gifts and skills that I do not possess.
Yeah.
But I feel real blessed because I think I have that gift of, like, relationships.
Yes.
And seeing people. So
you've been at the school 13 years, right? When you talked about your interview and you started off as a security guard, did you ever think that this would be such a big part of your life? Did you imagine, like, where'd you be now? Was that always the plan? Like, I'm going to get in here and then I'm going to move up?
Yeah. No, yeah. No. Like, to answer your question, no. Like, I knew it was going to be like, oh, this is going to be a job I like.
Yes.
But I didn't know, like, this was going to be, like, a passion, if that makes sense. Mm. Like, there's a few titles you get in life, like daughter, you know, son, you know, father, mother. Like, those titles stand for something. They mean something, right?
Yeah.
Like, I love the title of Mr. Paul. You know what I'm saying? Like, I take it serious.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. Like, when summer comes for me, like, I check up on a lot of my students. Like, there's a lot of parents that still call me, like, hey, get this kid together. You know what I'm saying? Like, I did all for sure. For sure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I go to Crunch Fitness. One of my mom is like, hey, you got to pull it. And the kid, like, 21, he's like, you got to pull up on him. And I did, and I will. You know what I'm saying? But, like, it's not a, we call it GHTCA for short. So, you know, but, like, it's not just a GHTCA thing for me.
Okay.
The school is the part that gets me to the parents, the kids. That like, it really takes a village. And I know that's cliche. Yep.
But it's true.
But it's true. Like, I know what it feels like to be an overwhelmed parent.
Yeah.
Like, I know what it feels like to, like, just be stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
And for those 8 hours a day, like, I just take it as my responsibility to, you know, there's sometimes we got to involve the parents if your kid acting up, right? But, like, for the most part, I got this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the only time I'm going to be calling you is to collaborate to come. You know what I mean? One of the best feelings is when I have a parent meeting and just seeing them stress. And I'd be like, chill. Like, we talking. Like, man. I'm not, you know what I mean?
Right?
Like, hey, what you nervous about? We just trying to figure something out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We not, you know, so like, and I think that's why the relationships I have with the parents are so strong, is because I don't come from a, you know, at our school is based around love.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's based around, you know, we do things a little bit different. And so when, you know, there's some kids that ain't gonna make it. That's just a thing. But like, we catch most of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we save most of them. So
that's what's up. And then like, there's that contrast, right? Like, you were 19, you had a felony, and like today you're responsible for helping guide these young people that might be in the same fork in the road. So that's a crazy contrast right there. And it's definitely like necessary to have people like you in the schools that actually care and that actually understand. So you received a pardon this year.
I did.
You received. So what did that moment feel like? And how does that happen?
Well, listen, you know, that happened. That, you know, I waited 21 years to get my pardon. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I waited 21 years to get my pardon. And, like, there was a time where, you know, like, I like talking politics. I know some people don't. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't mind it. But we had a governor that, like, stripped away those rights for felons to get pardons for 8 years. And I was, and you had to wait, and at that point in time, you had to wait 7 years. Mm. And I was 6 years and 9 months into my chance to get my felony pardon when he changed that rule.
Oh.
So then I had to wait another 8 years, and I'll be honest, like, even when Evers got into office, like, I didn't think he was, like, I didn't know if he was going to do it.
Yeah.
So, like, I just kind of sat back and watched, and, you know, filled out the paperwork, did what I needed to do, but, like, I also came in with the mindset that, like, if they don't want to give it to me, they just don't want to give it to me.
Yeah.
Because I for sure have proven
exactly
that I'm shit different.
You're doing the work.
So,
yeah.
So I didn't go up there with no high hopes that I was going to get it, but, I had a great lawyer to help me through the paperwork. And listen, to me, a great governor that, like, you know, opened that up and really understood that second chances matter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for someone that like me, like, my daughters never knew that old me.
Yeah.
You know, my oldest daughter, 20, she don't know that old me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, she, like, the old stories I could tell her, like, she wouldn't even believe. So it's like, just to be able to get that second chance feels amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, like, the amount of, like, people that's hitting me up, like, man, I want to do it too.
Yeah.
Feels even better.
Exactly. So do you share, like, that pardon with your students? Do they know about that story and things like that?
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I definitely share my old life with my students because at certain ages, like, I ain't going to tell a K-4 person, like, you know what I'm saying?
Dang, I went to jail. They're like, what?
Yeah, I ain't going to tell no K-4 kid that. But when you get to, like, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, like, you can open up a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think it's important. And, you know, for every year I worked at a school, every year I pick a student and I just, like, I call it, like, you know, I do it in my brother's honor that got killed, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I do something for them at the end of the year, whether it be, like, one student did hair, so I took her to a braiding class, like, you know what I'm saying, a 3-day braiding class.
I know that.
Another student, like, photography, so I gave her a camera, I bought her a camera.
Yeah.
Just different things like that, but, like, I pick a student out every day and I do it in his honor. Because it's like my old me is what made me now.
Exactly.
So, like, I don't want to run from that.
Yeah.
I don't glorify it. Yep. I'm not the one talking about, oh, I was, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I ain't doing none of that, but it's like.
You also know what you needed at that time. Yeah. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you definitely know what the kids need.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up this interview, I do want you to tell us what's going on at Greater New Earth.
Greater Holy Temple.
Or I'm sorry.
I got you. Don't worry. You've been talking about, I got it.
Greater
Holy Temple. Hey, no. Greater Holy Temple Christian Academy. What we got going on there is an amazing thing. Man, it's easy for me to talk about. You know what I mean? If I didn't believe in what we were doing over there, I wouldn't talk about it. But, man, I get blessed to work with an excellent leadership team that has come together and really strengthened it. You know what I'm saying? Last year, we brought Maurice Thomas over, who a lot of people in the community know if you're in education. I mean, and he just, man, he is a superstar. You know what I'm saying? And he's really just brought different ideas, you know, to the table in collaboration with, like, the teachers, because we need to hear what they need, right? Yeah. So we're in year 3 of a literacy program by Mr. Jake. And Mr. Jake goes viral. I mean, he travels all the time doing speeches to huge schools and districts and stuff like that. But this literacy program, we've literally watched kids that could not even recognize a letter in K-4 or K-5, sometimes first grade. Like, I'm gonna be honest, that's what we're dealing with in our community. And we've watched that, their numbers jump. And, like, if you can't read, like, education starts with literacy. You gotta be able to read.
Yeah.
And like I said, amazing staff.
Yeah.
I love the relationships I get to have with the parents on a day-to-day basis. And I would love to invite, and, like, if your child is that child that just needs a little, that's what Mr. Paul for.
Yep.
And those are the kids I hold closest to me.
Yeah.
So I would love for y'all, even if y'all want to just come out, look at it, visit, reach out. We have a great office staff, Ms. Greer and Ms. Jaji, that can walk you around and show you. But, like, I want Milwaukee to know about our school. And not just because I work there, but because of the things we're doing, though.
Man, thank you so much for coming and joining us here at the Lunch Break. This has been an amazing interview. Tell the people where they can find you before we run off to break.
Okay, so Paul Takis Facebook, day1_Paul on Instagram. And, like, reach out. Like, if you have any questions, like, really reach out. Because, like, I said, this is a passion for me. If I can't give you the answer, I can point you in the direction. And thank you so much for having me.
Man,
I really
of
appreciate
course.
That.
We got to get you back in here when Ray back.
Whenever you're ready.
Man, we got to do it again. Thank you so much, y'all. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back after this break.
Don't go anywhere.